Cracked fans, to another edition of the Cracked Interviews podcast. I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. As you listeners know, there is nothing we enjoy doing more than covering every storyline that emerges from the college tennis world. And if you followed this 2024 season closely, you know one of my favorite storylines of the year, the fact that with just two weekends of regular season play remaining, we have undefeated teams remaining in both the Division I women's and Division I men's games right now. Of course, we all know who's undefeated on the women's side. Number one, Oklahoma State, national indoor champions. They are very much looking the part of front runner as we enter NCAA tournament time. But perhaps you weren't aware of the fact that Denver men's tennis, they're 19-0 entering their final weekend of regular season play. The last time I can remember a team entering the NCAA tournament undefeated on the men's side, I'd have to go all the way back to 2013 when the University of Virginia men did it. That fact speaks to how special this run has been for the Denver men's program, and thus I could think of no better person to speak with to help share insight into that storyline than the current head coach of the Denver men's tennis program, of course, a man who was an All-American player himself back in the day at Ohio State, and a assistant turned associate head coach at Denver before ultimately being elevated to the head coaching position 3 years ago. Of course, I'm referring to first-time guest Denver men's tennis head coach Drew Eberle, who joins me on the podcast to break down everything happening with this Denver men's tennis program in 2024 and so much more. Simply put, this is a conversation I guarantee all of you listeners are going to enjoy. Not only will you be entertained, enthralled, engaged with everything you learn about the insight into this Denver men's tennis program, but again, Coach Eberle is a college tennis lifer, an All-American player turned assistant coach turned head coach. He's seen it all, and thus the insight he has to offer in today's conversation. Again, I am certain all of you listeners will enjoy. Of course, if you're looking for a more broad recap of everything happening in the Division I college tennis world, go check out the Great Shot podcast feed, where we recap the Division I men's and women's worlds each and every week. You can also watch those shows, by the way, live on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time, Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time as well. Tuesdays for the women, Wednesdays for the men. Of course, this is our final weekend of coverage on ESPN Plus for all things ACC, SEC, Big 12 regular season tennis. So Thursday through Sunday, be on the lookout for those broadcasts. We've also got a Big 10 broadcast for you all Sunday on our Crack Rackets YouTube channel. That is what our schedule looks like on the horizon here, as it relates to the college tennis world. Of course, plenty of NCAA coverage still to come as we reach postseason play. For now, though, let's talk about one of the best stories of this 2024 regular season. Let's get into all things Denver men's tennis with Denver men's tennis head coach Drew Eberle. Joining us on the podcast for the first time today is a guest I am certainly looking forward to chatting with, as of course he is a college tennis lifer who finds himself now at the head of the Denver men's tennis program, a program that finds itself as the last undefeated team in Division I men's tennis here in the 2024 season. Of course, before that, he was an All-American at Ohio State, shockingly has dropped to just 15th on the all-time wins count. Perhaps that's a discussion we can get into today, but more than anything, it is just a pleasure to be joined by Denver men's tennis head coach Drew Eberle on today's show. Coach, welcome to the Cracked Interviews podcast. This conversation was long overdue. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, and excited to be on, and love your podcast and your content and all you do for college tennis. So yeah, I'm excited.
I appreciate you saying that. Did you like how I threw the little knife in at the start? Down to 15th on the all-time wins count. Given your significance to the program, again, like, you're in the Mount Rushmore discussion.
I don't know about Mount Rushmore. Here's, being 15, I haven't checked lately about what I was on the all-time wins list, but that program and what it's done over the years is truly amazing. And Yeah, I mean, I'm just honored to have been a part of it, and yeah, I definitely have dropped in the last 10 to 15 years, that's for sure. So I haven't checked in a while, but
yeah, that's probably healthy for you to have not checked. That's my job, to do the research on your behalf. For what it's worth, still fourth in all-time doubles wins, like, which is ridiculous given the run of success, obviously, over the last 20 years. Just so you know, it's the singles wins that have pushed you down the list. It's that all these guys rack up hundreds of singles victories while competing in Columbus. And look, I want to get back to all of that, how those formative experiences shaped you into the coach you are today. But I think the place we have to start is with your Denver team here in 2024. I think it's the obvious opening question. What does 19-0 mean to you? Because to all of us in the college tennis universe, that means perfection so far this season.
Yeah, it's been an amazing season. It's been cool, and we've got a lot of recognition internally here at DU and in the Denver tennis community, which is an amazing one. So really proud of our guys and our program and our coaches for what we have achieved this year, and we still have a lot of goals and things that we want to accomplish in front of us. But yeah, it's been an amazing run. We have an older team with five seniors that it's a cohesive group, an amazing group of guys. I've been on a lot of teams before as a player and a coach, but this is one of the most special teams I've ever been a part of, and very proud of our guys and our coaches of what we've done and the work that we've put in. And they deserve all the success that they're getting, and we'll see how we can finish it out the rest of the year. And we've got two matches on at home to finish out the regular season on Friday and Saturday to go 21-0 for an undefeated regular season, which would obviously be extremely special, for our players and the program at Denver, which is, a rich tennis tradition and has had a lot of good coaches in the past. And so I'm very proud of what we've done and, looking to continue building on this moving forward.
Let's talk about, again, the context of your team and what this season means, because you talk about that rich history of success. For those that follow the sport closely, they know your team is always in the NCAA tournament conversation. I believe coming into this season, you've won four straight regular season Summit League crowns, and so you guys are always in the mix. That said, certainly last year to miss out on the NCAA tournament, I'm sure that's something that the guys felt all off season long. How motivating was that in preparing for this year? And could you sense, I don't know if anyone can sense 19-0, but could you sense something special with this group in the fall?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously tough how we ended last season. We had some ups and downs last year and some learning experiences for me as a coach with some personnel issues and situations. But, those situations, I think, helped mold and shape the moving forward. And this group is special for sure. I mean, they're a very close-knit group. They care a lot about each other. They're very close off the court. So when it comes time to stepping on the court for a battle and a tough match, which we've had a lot this year, they're ready to go, and they fight for each other, everybody on the team from number one player to number nine player. And, we made some nice pickups over the off season in the transfer portal with Marvin Schaber from San Diego and Rikuto Yamaguchi from Washington that really helped us. And then, we've got some horses at the top of the lineup, Team Spain, as we call them, with Nicolas Cuesta and Daniel Sancho Arbizu. That's a mouthful of last names right there. But those two boys have won a lot of matches in their career. They're very tough. They have some interesting game styles, but when the match is on the line, those guys are Spanish bulls, man. They are tough as it come. And Nico is our leader for sure, and he sets the tone. And Charlie Miller as well as a leader, and this group has done an amazing job, so I'm very proud of them. And the other thing that's really helped us this year is we've got two assistant coaches that are great, so we have three coaches on the staff now. With the NCAA rule change, we can have three total coaches. And having Will Davies here for his second year, Will played at Iowa under Ross Wilson, and then 1 year at San Diego with Ryan Keckley. He's been amazing. He's a star in the making. And we got Mitch Stewart back, who is our assistant my first year as head coach. He's back in Denver and helping the guys and helping us. And he's an incredible addition as well, too. So I think during matches, having three coaches is the first year I've ever had this. And it makes a huge difference. Match coaching, I believe, it frees me up a little bit. And, you know, the guys love Mitch and Will. So it almost allows me to watch more, absorb, and really assess how we're doing and what we need to do, not only in the moment in the match, but also moving forward for practice and development. Mm-hmm.
I know both Marvin and Rakuto, you mentioned coming over from the transfer portal this past off season, but looking at your roster, you have one sophomore. Everyone else is an upperclassman.
Yeah.
Is that a luxury? Like, does it make your life a little bit easier, not only being able to reinforce the message, but to have three coaches to do it? It sounds like yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a luxury until next fall when the changing of the guard comes and I get a lot more gray hairs and anxiety. But yeah, it's interesting how it kind of worked out with our class arrangement. You know, again, like I talked about, that kind of was from a couple years ago, and we had some guys move on from the program. So it kind of worked out that way this year. We have a lot of upperclassmen, again, like I've talked about, and that's, you know, the reason I think for a lot of the success, the guys understand the program, they understand our expectations. It's a very close group. They've all worked with Mitch and Will and myself a lot together. So, you know, to be able to be freed up, to have three coaches, to run practice, to run individuals, you know, is really helpful. And these guys work very hard, and they push each other. So, it makes my job a lot easier for sure at times, which is freed me up to recruit a lot, which we have a lot of recruiting to do. We have five new guys coming in next year. So the changing of the guard is coming. So,
yeah. Well, let the record show gray hairs are better than no hairs. So I think you're still winning on that front. You mentioned, as you referred to them, the Spanish Bulls. I like that. A mouthful of names, but a handful for every opponent that plays at 1-2. And you mentioned Nicholas Herrero Cuesta at 1, Daniel Sancho Arbizu at 2. They're a combined 32-3 at the top two spots. I don't care what your schedule looks like, if you're a Power 5 team, if you're a non-Power 5 team. That's ridiculous at the top two, because every roster you play is going to have at least a guy on there to make life difficult. I guess the question is how? How do they go about finding that success so far this year?
Yeah, and Marvin Shaber, too, throw that in there in the top three. I think our top three with those three guys have lost a combined four matches, and I don't feel like
48-4. 48-4, coach.
Yeah, so, I mean, those guys, you know, I don't care what level you're playing at, Division 1, 2, 3, NAIA, JUCO, you know, when you play top two or even top three, the level is very, very high. I mean, you have to be ready in every single match. I'm always impressed in college tennis how good the depth is at 1 and 2 and how high the level is. You know, I was a career 5 and 6 player in college tennis, so I kind of played the same player over and over. And, you know, Ty did a good job of coaching me on how to beat those guys. But, you know, at 1 and 2, you really have to grow your game and develop it on a daily basis. Not to say that you don't lower in the lineup, but, you know, those guys are getting everyone's best shot, everyone's best player. And, you know, Nico and Daniel, a.k.a. Ponchi, which is a self-proclaimed nickname. I don't know where that nickname came from. But Ponchi, those guys are so tough in the moment, and they fight so hard. And nothing comes easy for them because they're not 6'4 with, you know, 130 mile per hour serves. So they've done it over a period of time. They've pushed each other. You know, they're good friends. They compete hard, and they've been working hard the last year and a half. I mean, after last season, those guys got right to play in the PTTs and futures. And, you know, we counted it up, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and our top three players over the last 9 months have each played 35 singles matches. So they've played a lot of tennis. They've played a lot of tennis, and they've won a lot. So their confidence is high. And, you know, seeing them and what they do at the top of lineup helps, you know, push everybody else and makes everybody else better. So really proud of those guys, and hope they can keep doing what they've been doing.
Yeah, I mean, again, we all play match calculus in our heads, and certainly I'm sure you go into thinking, all right, I'm feeling pretty good about our top three today, and they've certainly delivered all season long. You know, the four spot you've played around with, obviously, but still, overall, you look 4, 5, 6. I think the record's 31-17 overall, so clearly you're having success at the bottom half of the lineup. You feel like you have it set? You know where all the pieces are going to be playing moving forward? Are you still playing around? What have you seen from those guys 4 through 6?
Yeah, I mean, we're still playing around with it. The good thing this year that we haven't had in the past in Denver, You know, I've been here 9 years and we've never had the depth that we have this year. So we have eight guys that can really step in and play singles and doubles at any time. And we feel confident. We have not had that in the past. What we've had in the past is we have, you know, five guys that play and we're always trying to find a sixth guy. Well, now we're going eight deep and the eight guy can come in and right away and play. So they all elevate each other. It helps push each other in practice. So, you know, Rafael Papajek, who's a sophomore from England, he stepped up. He's really made a huge jump this year. And Nish Sirinakith, you know, who had a tough first year coming from Texas A&M. He's been an amazing, so proud of him. He's one of our team leaders on and off the court. His tennis and his growth and development, I'm so proud of him. And Charlie Miller, who's been here for a long time and an older guy and a captain, he's really stepped up. So really, really proud of our entire team and they've pushed each other. And, you know, we've got some tough conference matches to finish out the year. So we'll see how we do with those.
You mentioned bringing in two transfers. Obviously, Marvin's had remarkable success. So it has to have you thinking, is that something you're going to be looking to moving forward to add a piece ideally from the transfer portal every year? Just bring in an experienced hand to join whatever young recruits you're able to add to the mix as well?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, Will and I go back and forth talking about that all the time. I think the transfer portal is going to be very interesting now. You know, I think the game has changed a little bit with all of the resources that Power Five schools have to offer, you know, transfers or recruits. So we have to be very unique, as we always have been, and clever about, you know, how we bring in players. But yeah, I mean, we've brought it. We have four freshmen coming in and one transfer already. And we might look to add one more transfer, but the transfers have done very well here. You know, coming from schools where maybe they're not getting the playing time that they want or, you know, looking for kind of just more playing, and they come to Denver and they do really well. And, you know, Marvin was an interesting one because he was teammates with Will at San Diego. And obviously I'm good friends with Ryan Keckley. And so, you know, he helped out on that one. And Marvin was a perfect fit for us this year. And, you know, we recruited him on the front end. So we've got a lot of good relationships with our recruiting. We've forged and developed a lot of strong relationships between Mitch, Will, and myself over the past couple of years. So it's going to be very interesting to what this offseason brings in the portal on May 6th. You know, I think there's always good opportunities there, but you have to be very selective and careful, you know, but I think it will be very interesting because I think it's going to be harder and harder for mid-majors to get quality transfers based off of everything that the Power Fives can offer. You know, it used to be you could count up their 4.5 scholarships and see where they're at, and maybe the school's tapped out. But some of these schools, the way that they can add players is changing the game a little bit. And it's, you know, for us, we just have to simply adjust, and we have a lot to offer as well too. So we will continue to look to add players if they can add value. But, you know, we want 4-year guys ultimately at the end of the day. That's the goal. And, but the transfers here have worked out very, very well for us on both sides.
That does, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but that does feel like the biggest impact of NIL. It's not that every player is getting a sweet $50,000 deal or whatever it is. It just feels like it's been able to bridge the gap scholarship-wise and take your 4.5 maybe to 7 so you can get maybe 5 guys on full and split those last two accordingly so life's just a little bit more comfortable on the roster. Again, this is a little bit of a tangent. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I do. And I think Alston, you know, for people who know what Alston money is, I think that's a big one. Some mid-majors don't have it, you know, the Power 4 or 5, whatever we're calling them nowadays. Yeah. And I just think there's a lot of good coaches out there, too. Yeah. I think there's a lot of resources and competent coaches out there to track players. I mean, you know, when I was growing up playing college tennis, you know, I mean, there wasn't UTR and tennis recruiting, and you couldn't watch, you know, a live stream of a 15K in Spain. And now you yeah. can, and, you know, everyone has two really good assistant coaches or one really good assistant coach where, you know, when I was playing in the Big Ten, you know, there was a handful of decent coaches, no offense to them, but the level of coaches, in my opinion, nowadays is so high. And the game has become so competitive, which I think is great for college tennis. But, you know, it definitely makes it harder on the recruiting front with how much competition there is.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. You're absolutely right. It's a great thing for the sport because you talk about the depth on your roster. That's the defining feat of this season is just the gap in talent, the parity. The gap is so narrow and there's so much parity because every team runs nine deep, it feels like, this season. And, you know, again, it's a bit of a tangent, I suppose, but you were for 7 years assistant or associate head coach at Denver before becoming the head coach. So you've recruited the school for a decade now. Talk me through what it's like to recruit, again, a program that isn't the glamorous, glitzy, maybe Power Four, but to, you know, top 50, decade now consecutively. What is the pitch you make to prospective recruits in selling this Denver program?
Yeah, I was assistant for 6 years and now head coach for three, but I believe this is a relationship business. I think, you know, it's definitely the brand behind you at what you're selling, but you know, what I stress and what we've stressed here over the years is we're looking for well-rounded individuals. You know, we want to get to know the student athlete. We want to know what kind of student they are, where they come from, their family. We want to get to know their family, their coaches, their parents, you know, and you know, obviously the tennis aspect is important for the UTR and the eye test, but you know, what are they going to do when we push them and how are they going to respond when things are tough? And you know, Denver does have a lot to sell in terms of the city and the academics and the school and the weather, even though people think the weather is, they think snowstorms and mountains, you know, if you want bad weather, I'm from the Midwest like you, you know, the Midwest weather, you don't see the sun from November to March. You know, Denver, you know, we joke about 300 days of sunshine, but it's true. It really is. The weather is great. The academics are great. It's a great place to be a student athlete and be a tennis player. And, you know, we've got our own facility on campus with 7 indoor and 6 outdoor. And, you know, we've had a lot of success. And if guys want to get developed and they want to get worked hard and pushed, you know, this is the right place for them. So we've really developed a lot of good relationships with recruits over the years. And, you know, we're looking for the right ones. And, you know, they might not be a 13 UTR when they come in. And, you know, Nico and Ponchi were both, you know, Nico was an 11-7 when he came in, and now he's a 13-2. You know, Daniel was, you know, came from Lamar for 1 year where he won a lot of matches at number one, and they did a great job with him at Lamar. And that's a good program. But he just came in and went from an 11-9, you know, 12 to a 13 very quickly. So, you know, guys develop here and they get better and they like going to school here and they like the city. You know, it helps that the Nuggets has won an NBA title here recently. The Avs are on fire. They won it 2 years ago. So, you know, and DU's got, you know, great athletic programs, so many good head coaches. And, you know, we got DU hockey tomorrow in the Frozen Four and big game there. And so, you know, the athletic department is very strong and we might not have football, but our sports are extremely competitive and the guys like it here. So, you know, we might not be able to out sell with the resources that a Power Five have, but you know, if you like to win and you like to work hard, this is the place for you.
I warned you might swear at me before the start of the show. I think this might be the question I get it. For a man whose age starts with the number 4, do you Instagram DM way more than you thought you would?
My age starts with the 4?
Are you not in the 40s yet? I was doing
Were you baiting me? I'm 38. I'm 30. I'm not even close to 40.
Well, I did some math. I was like, he graduates in 08. I'm in my mid. Like, it's 2024, 16 years. We're pretty close.
That's messed up. You just rattled confidence. I like to say I'm in my mid-30s.
Yeah. Well, let me just say, again, if I took off the hat, you would be winning on that side of the equation. So you're looking good, my friend. But I just, again, recruiting in the modern day, it's a lot of Instagram DMing, right? Like, that's what recruiting looks. It's not the emails. It's not the letters. It's changed a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, we like the Zooms. We like the FaceTimes. I don't do the TikTok. I don't get TikTok. you know, and yeah, we do send a lot of Instagram messages. You know, Mitch and Will keep me young, so they know all the trends and everything. No, I mean, in the recruiting front, I mean, Will is an extremely good recruiter. He's a high level recruiter. He has a lot of connections from his playing days and now as a coach. People like him. And, you know, I've got a lot of connections as well. And we've built up a lot of good relationships, like I've said, and especially in Europe. And, you know, we're trying to get the U.S. market here. And it's a tough one, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of social media for sure. I think, The social media game is what really draws these kids. I think, you know, the videography work that these programs have and some of the content they're putting out, I think it's really cool. And, you know, I think we do a good job with it. But yeah, I mean, we tried to get as many contacts as possible, and Instagram definitely seems to be the way. When I started 9 years ago, it was Facebook, and Facebook is about as dead as can be.
Yeah. Meta now, I believe, is the official term. Yeah, Facebook, yeah. Literally dead. It's moved on. No, you bring up Will and Mitch. As you've grown, you know, again, it's only year three for you on the job as a head coach, but obviously, again, almost a decade with this Denver program, 38 years young. I can't emphasize that enough for our listeners. How much have you learned? That's not maybe the right phrasing, but do you defer maybe more in recruiting to your assistants than you did at the start? And I guess, how have you, as you've gained more experience in the head coaching job, how has that your role changed over these first 3 years?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think here at a place like Denver, for me, I have to have a lot of faith and trust in our assistants, or, you know, a single assistant. And, you know, Will is very good, and I have a lot of faith in him. We're on the same page. We have the same beliefs and the same system. So when it comes to running practice or recruiting, you know, he knows how to do it. And you know, I've obviously coached him up on that, you know, but I think for sure you have to have faith in your assistants, and at a mid-major, you have to give them a lot of responsibility to make the program run efficiently and effectively, especially in the recruiting game. You know, I'm overseeing everything, and you know, we're always talking about recruiting and player development and how to help the guys. So it's always a conversation and a cohesive conversation. And I want their feedback at all times, and the players' feedback as well too. And their, you know, their input is very important in recruiting as well too, for their input when these guys come on visits. But you know, I would say what I've learned over the years is just to always adapt and evolve, because I think the college tennis game and college athletics is changing at a rapid pace. And so we have to stay on top of things. And so I lean on our guys and our assistants to help shape what I think we need to do and how we need to move forward. I ultimately will make the final say, and I have, you know, my own thoughts, but I've also had a lot of help. You know, I've had a lot of help, and, you know, Danny Westerman hired me here at Denver and gave me my first shot in coaching. I owe a lot to him, and learned a lot from Ricardo Rubio, you know, working with him, and very different styles of coaches. And I only had 1 year with Danny and five with Ricardo, but I just learned a lot. And, you know, I felt like I grew a lot as well too, during those times. Those are some of, I think I learned way more as an assistant than I have maybe as a head coach. I know that kind of sounds weird, but, you know, I still have a lot of help. You know, obviously the Ohio State connection and, you know, Ty is the main reason for where I am at in my career, and why a lot of us who went to Ohio State are at the place that we are at. He's helped shape and mold me to the person that I am today. And, you know, I owe him a lot. And, you know, you mentioned Shills earlier in the conversation, Dave Schilling, for people that don't know who Shills is, you know, yeah. You know, longtime assistant at Ohio State and coached me and a lot of us. You know, we owe a lot of the success that we had at Ohio State to Dave Schilling. I mean, he helped us a lot, and he means a lot to us. And now that he's coaching at you know, Denison and what he's doing there, he's someone that's helped me a lot. And someone that I bounce ideas off of, and, you know, Chris Gardner as well too. You know, Chris coached me at Ohio State for 2 years, and now he's at Navy. In my opinion, he's one of the best coaches out there. You know, those three guys, they pick up my calls at all times. I know they're there for me. And they gave me a lot. They know me well as a person too. So when I have questions, you know, and I need advice and I need help on a situation or a recruit or a player or scheduling or anything, they're there for me, and they help me a lot. So I owe a lot to those guys, not only for what they helped me do as a player and wildly overachieve as a player, but they've helped me as a coach a lot too. And so that's been really helpful, knowing that you have someone there to call that will pick up your call and help you out when you need help. So, you know, I think that's helped shape me a lot to where we are now.
Plus, I like the idea of it's Notre Dame and Denver for a final recruit. You can go, let me tell you about young Ross Wilson. Like, this is why you're coming to Denver. And then he can go, let me tell you about young Drew. And so it works both ways, right?
That's fun. Yeah, there's a lot of history there. Yeah, I mean, Ross is a big reason I went to Ohio State. And, you know, he's an amazing coach and, you know, hopefully be a head coach here shortly, which I think he will be. And, yeah, I mean, a lot of the Ohio State connection, their deep roots there. There's lots of histories. I mean, we could do a whole podcast just on stories about us, you know, and those times. But those were great years and great group of guys. And I see a lot of similarities between our teams that started a lot of the success that Ohio State had back in the day before they are what they are now. I see a lot of similarities with the cohesiveness and the culture and the closeness and togetherness from our teams, you know, that had Ross Wilsons on it, that had Scott Greens and Chris Klingemans and Kronagis and Brian Koniecos, those guys, Todd Wojciechowski as well too, who's at Case Western. I mean, he's one of the best teammates I've ever had, incredible leader. And those guys were incredible teammates for me. And, you know, I see a lot of similarities with our team now for how close they are and how much they love each other and fight for each other. The similarities are there. The level might not be similar, but the fight is there, and the togetherness and the belief is there.
Yeah. Since Will was coached by Ross and coaches under you, he's part of the Thai tree now, right? Like, that's how it works. I think that's how it works. That's
he might be an honorary Buckeye now that you say that. But yeah, I mean, Ross coached him at Iowa, and I've followed Will, and I've known Will a long time. And I followed him as a player, and as a player, he was always one of the toughest guys, vocal leaders. And so, you know, I knew he would be a perfect fit for our program to help our guys and you know, just hit the ground running. And he's absolutely done that. So, yeah, there's a lot of similarities. And, you know, he played for Ryan Keckley as well, too, who's part of that honorary Buckeye group. And so, you know, I like to keep the circle close. And and he's been great. And Will be a great head coach one day.
No, it's my favorite tree we have in college tennis. My last few questions for you, you know, again, in that theme. You come from that Ohio State tree. To all of you, I know it's just ingrained in you. Doubles is important. Last year, you know, you guys were under 500 in double sets during that 2023 season. This year, obviously, it's been a different story. Is the doubles point where it needs to be for you guys to not only finish the season in the fashion you want, but, you know, again, go into the NCAA tournament, knowing what you have in the top three? Man, if you guys take a doubles point, look out. How are you feeling about that point?
Yeah. Last year was a struggle with doubles. You know, unfortunately, I just don't think that we had the doubles horses types of players to help us out. And I think our system was a little sloppy last year, to be honest, but that's not on the players. That's on me. Nobody else. And this year we've really focused and honed in on the doubles, you know, and it's really gotten a lot better. And, you know, the systems that we had at Ohio State and, you know, that we were taught in the way that I played as a doubles player were things that I tried to implement early on and even as an assistant. And I just wasn't able to effectively get the messaging across. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought it was, you know, I'll take the blame because I thought it was more on the players, but now I see it's more on how I explain it to them and how I coach them on it. And we've got our system down really well right now. We know where shots are going. We know where people are moving. We know where the overhead is going, you know, those types of things. And so the energy and the intensity at which we're playing our doubles point is much more clear now. And, you know, guys already know what they're doing, which allows them to play fast and clear. They don't have to think about where they're going to hit a shot, you know, in the moment when there's a lot of pressure. So really proud of our guys with the doubles. You know, I think we've lost three or four doubles points this year. I don't know, but, just even results aside, just the energy and the clarity is much better. Which I think I've done a better job of, and I just didn't do a good enough job in the past. So we need to make sure moving forward with it, when we bring in the new guys, that they understand quickly how we play doubles and what the expectations are, because it's such a crucial point, as you well know.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, all of that said, 19-0. Undefeated. It's April 10th. What is it going to take for you guys to finish the season in that fashion? You mentioned it, home matches here coming up this weekend to wrap up the regular season, conference tournament on the horizon, perhaps NCAA tournament on the horizon as well. you know, what is it going to take for this group to end in the fashion that you guys are looking for?
Yeah, I'd say the number one thing is staying healthy, which we've done a good job of. And obviously our depth has helped that. We've had a couple bumps and bruises and situations throughout the year. But, you know, I don't know what you've seen, but I've seen a year in college tennis where I've never seen so many injuries and sicknesses and players being out. So, you know, that might be the new trend. So I think number one is definitely we need to stay healthy, which our guys have been doing a good job with taking care of their bodies. But, you know, the goal is each day to continue to get better and not look too far ahead or behind and just stay in the present. And, you know, like I said, we've got nine guys who show up every day and work hard with three coaches. And so when that happens, you know, guys get better and guys improve. So, you know, we've done a good job this year of when match day comes, we fight hard. And the guys lay it out there and, you know, we haven't had many situations where, you know, a spot doesn't show up to compete or has the right competitive focus, which in the past we've had a lot of inconsistencies with. So, you know, we can't put too much pressure on ourselves. You know, each day we're 0-0. And, you know, on Friday when we play Oral Roberts, you know, we're not 19-0, we're 0-0. But, you know, it's been an amazing season and people are really taking recognition and of our players and our program, which I'm really proud and excited for because we've got a great product and want people to know about it. So we just got to keep pushing, but our leaders will carry us. And they know what it takes and they know what's coming. So, you know, that's what it's nice luxury to have when you have an experienced group, you know, and we'll see when the new group comes in next year. Hopefully they can adjust quickly. But yeah, I'm very proud of our guys and excited to see what we can do the rest of the season.
Absolutely. We haven't had an undefeated team enter the NCAA tournament since 2013. So obviously it is one of the biggest stories in college tennis. We'll all be watching. My last three questions for you here. You're a lifer in college tennis. Again, dates back to your playing days at Ohio State. Now, of course, you're head coach. You were the assistant for the 6 years prior. Why? What is it about this sport that brings you back, that has you, you know, again, captivated by it and still working within it?
Yeah, I mean, I think to my playing career and my tennis career, I had a lot of amazing coaches from junior tennis, you know, all the way through up, you know, college and people that mean so much to me and helped me out a lot, you know, become the person that I am. And everything I've gotten in my life has been through tennis. You know, so I love helping out these guys and helping them, you know, achieve the things that they've achieved and, you know, seeing them graduate and get jobs and maybe one day get married is really cool to see. But, you know, I think, you know, the people in my life that have helped me out from, you know, my junior days when Mark Bay coached me in Chicago growing up to Chris Strzok. And then I get to college and, you know, Ty and Shills and Chris Garner, those guys helped me out a lot. You know, I wasn't what I was at the end of my career when I came in. You know, I was a little soft. I was a little, you know, I wasn't tough, to be honest. And I didn't love tennis in juniors. I always loved playing for a team and I always enjoyed team sports more than individual sports. So when I got to Ohio State, it was just the perfect setup for me. You know, I was always a better doubles player and I was kind of under the radar as a recruit and some schools passed on me a little bit, but Ty from the get-go believed in me and was consistent with his messaging. And you know, so I want to help our guys out a lot and, you know, I want to give them the best experience possible. And I, you know, might not always be their best friend at practice. I'm going to push them, but that means that I care. And, you know, I think college tennis is amazing. I think, it's an amazing product. You know, unfortunately it's tough to watch on TV. So it's kind of tough to get it out there, but, you know, we've had great fan support here at DU for our matches in the Denver tennis community. It's an unbelievable tennis community. People come out, they care, you know, we get 100 to 150 people per home match. And so, you know, we're just trying to spread the word and I love the relationships that I've made in college tennis. And it's interesting being 38, not 42, as you tried to say. You know, it's interesting. I'm not the young guy anymore, but I'm not old. So yeah. I'm kind of in between right now. And, you know, I have a 2.5-year-old daughter. So that kind of, I've become a father in the last 2 years, which is the most amazing thing ever. But it's an interesting place to where I am. I'm helping out younger guys, but I'm still getting helped out by people that helped me when I was young. So that age that I'm in right now is an interesting one because you're no longer the young up and coming stud but you're also maybe not, you know, the older guys and been in it too long. But I love college athletics, and I love college tennis, and I hope it continues on the path that it is, and hopefully things don't change too much.
I was looking at a poll on Twitter, and for the first time ever, I wasn't in the 18 to 27 age group. I was devastated. I was like, what do you mean I'm not in the youngest demographic? Like, this, it killed me. We're in the perfect strike zone is really the actual answer. But, you know, last two here. You were there 06, 07, 08 when the Buckeyes Big Ten run got started. I would ask for just one tie story from that time, but I'm sure there are countless to turn to. What was that like to be there at the beginning of the run? How intense was that?
Yeah, it was definitely a different time in society. And, you know, there's no cell phones and social media, which a lot of us guys who were on the team during that time joke about that are coaches now. I love the no cell phones. I mean, for our team, there's no cell phones allowed at meals, you know, before matches, there's no cell phones. When I finally get out of college tennis one day, I'm gonna go back to flip phone razor where you can see like three words on the screen. But, you know, I think it was definitely a different time. And, you know, we didn't, you know, Ohio State wasn't the bright shining program that it was now in terms of the facility and everything that they have with the futures and challengers and everything that Ty has built up. I mean, he's one of the most impressive CEOs and salesmen out there that I've seen, not just in college tennis, but just in general. He's so charismatic. He's so smart and always ahead of the game. You know, that's what people don't understand. He's always 2-3 steps ahead. And while people are trying to figure out, you know, how he does it or why do they win so many doubles points, he's getting even more ahead. So there are certainly a lot of stories. You know, we used to play in the West Rec, which was four courts, and you know, it was loud and it was a barn, and Ross Wilson's lefty serve would run you into the wall there. So but I mean, my time at Ohio State was amazing. I mean, the friendships and the experiences, I mean, all the wins and the Big Ten championships, those are nice. And obviously you hang them up on the wall, but you know, the experiences and the relationships are forever. And, you know, the player development there is unlike anything I've ever seen. You know, I think about it all the time here at Denver, how they do it and how does Ty do it? Cause I'm trying to replicate it here. And, you know, I was one of them, you know, kind of under the radar Midwest kid who was athletic and good at doubles that Ty just, you know, made an All-American and Big Ten champ and whatever in the wins column, you know, and still to this day, I don't know how they do it. And they just work so hard, and he instills a level of toughness and belief in you, where, you know, in juniors, if I lost to a seeded player, I thought it was okay, you know, and I was okay with maybe competing as hard at 60%, but he showed me what it really meant to work hard and sacrifice and be tougher than people. And I remember after my, you know, to start my freshman year, I wasn't tough and I wasn't where I needed to be to help that program. And by the end of my freshman year, I remember the exact moment I knew I'd hit the point where I was physically and mentally stronger and enough to face whatever challenge came. And practices and were so intense and difficult and high, you know, high level that by the time, you know, I was playing 5 or 6 against Indiana or, you know, Michigan State, that was the easiest part of the week. And so, you know, it's incredible what he's done there and that program. So I'm proud to, you know, be an alumni of it. But you know, I'm trying to do and build special things here at Denver but the experiences and times we had were pretty amazing. But yeah, there's tons of tie stories that you could tell. I remember one year we were at Michigan and we were playing the doubles point and, you know, we were outside and Crow and I had won at 2 doubles and Klingemann and Mullins were up 7-0 at 1 and we had lost 3. So it came down to that. And they were at one point were up 7-0 and they had gotten it Michigan had got it back to 7-all. I think that's where you played the tiebreaker at 7-all. Couldn't remember. I think it might've been 8-all.
Yeah.
And we didn't know where Ty was. And he had gone back into the trees behind like where now the gymnastics facility is. And he couldn't believe it. So he just went out there and just hung out in the woods, I think, because he was so nervous and stressed, which now being a coach, I don't blame him. I would have been even farther into those woods. But they ended up winning that match in the dubs, and we ended up winning the match. But I just remember kind of looking around, you know, watching the match, trying to see where Ty was. And, you know, Garner and Shills are out there coaching. And I think I see Ty up in the woods, like by the gymnastics facility. I was like, what's he doing over there? But he was, you know, probably just calming his nerves a little bit. But that one is a pretty funny one. But yeah, I mean, there's tons of stories. I mean, he's one of the funniest, most charismatic guys out there. So you could spend a whole podcast on telling those stories.
One of these days, I'm going to get, I'll say, a 30 rack probably of beer, and get you, Crow, Kenyako, Ross, Scott. Like, I want the early year teams, because those are the teams that are most fascinating to me. And yeah, like, again, the most unfiltered tie.
Him, yeah, there would be no recording allowed in that. Yeah. The recording button would not be allowed to hit during that
or
time.
We record it and send it to him as a birthday gift and be like, yeah, this is what you mean to everyone, because this is just a reminder of things you've done in the best sort of sense and the impact you have had. Yeah, again, that's just, everyone speaks so fondly about that era. And so I always love hearing whatever insight I can. My last question for you, you talk about what you're trying to build at Denver. Talk to me about what fans out there who are listening to this can do to support your program, not just this season, but moving forward as well.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just getting to know our players and our program and come out to the matches. You know, we play at Denver Tennis Park, which is located right by our campus. It's a great proximity in Denver proper. And, you know, the word is out in Denver. I mean, people know about us in the tennis community, and you know, people are into it. And, you know, Denver is a very outdoor, active city. And the weather is great. So people love their tennis. But, you know, we've been getting great fan turnout for our home matches. You know, like I said, we get 100 to 200 people per match, which, you know, doesn't sound like a lot, but for a college tennis match, you know, it is a lot, and our guys love it. And it creates a great atmosphere. So, you know, the support throughout the Denver community has been amazing. And, you know, we're actually going to be on Fox 31 today. They're coming out to practice. So that's exciting. So it's a big media day for us, I guess, as big as you can get in college tennis. But now the support has been amazing, and the outreach and the recognition. So, you know, we're just going to keep enjoying it and riding it. You know, I'm trying to manage everyone's expectations, because they're like, okay, well, what can we do next year? And I said, well, next year, Nicholas Herrero-Quace is not going to be here. So unless we somehow change his name to have seven last names and get him an extra year of eligibility, you know, I don't know how that's going to necessarily happen. You know, it's exciting time, and we're just going to keep working and try to bring in the right student athletes to help our program move forward and build the product that we have here at Denver.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, Coach, watching what you guys have done this season, the last undefeated team in Division I men's college tennis, certainly speaks to what you have built, how the guys have performed throughout the course of this season. And, you know, I think everyone in college tennis is wishing for your success moving forward, and certainly appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today. I feel like we're going to do this more in the future. I reserve the right to bring you back for more questioning, but appreciate you taking the time to chat, and sincerely wishing you and the team luck moving forward.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course, Coach. Take care.
All right. Go Pios.
Hope all of you enjoyed my conversation with Denver men's tennis head coach Drew Epperly. A massive thank you to Coach for taking the time to chat. I know if someone screwed up my age and charged me a couple of extra years, I would have hung up the phone on them right away. Obviously, Coach didn't do that. Appreciate him having fun with me throughout the course of the episode, and sincerely speaks to the six. I mean, again, 19-0 speaks for itself, but if you're not a believer in Coach Epperly, the job he's doing at Denver, you're just not paying close enough attention to what's happening right now in the college tennis world. They're undefeated, and it's April 10th. So, yeah, it's one of the biggest stories we have of this 2024 season. I know I speak for all of us when I say we are wishing he and his team success down the home stretch. Of course, if you're looking for everything else happening in the college tennis world, we've got you covered here at Cracked Rackets. Recaps every Tuesday, Wednesday on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel, live 9 p.m. Eastern time. Tuesdays, we talk about the women. Wednesdays, we talk about the men. Of course, each of those conversations posted as Great Shot podcast episodes the next day. So you can catch them, and you can also watch the replays on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel, I suppose, as well. However you'd like to consume that show, know that there are multiple ways to do so. Of course, this is our final weekend of regular season coverage, ACC, SEC, Big 12 regular seasons. You can follow that coverage Thursday through Sunday on ESPN+. We have Big Ten coverage the next couple of Sundays on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel as well. A shout-out, as always, to our super producer, Daniel Westoff, for the of an editing job he does day in, day out, making all of our content possible. A shout-out as well to the support we get from our dear friends at Tennis Point, tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15. With all of that said, for our fantastic super producer, Daniel Westoff, our friends at Tennis Point, from all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You've been listening to another edition of the Cracked Interviews Podcast. Stay safe, stay healthy. See you all soon. Thanks, everyone.